Welcome to the Healing for Male Survivors podcast. This is a podcast for male survivors of sexual abuse and assault, whether as a child or as an adult. Know that you are not alone and the abuse was not your fault. My name is Mike Chapman. I'm a certified recovery life coach and also a survivor. Let's find hope and healing together. And welcome to the Healing for Male Survivors podcast. This is Mike Chapman. And this week, as a special guest, we have Jay Patrick on. I will share his introduction in a second. And again, this is Tuesday night live. If you would like to join us in future live podcasts, feel free to sign up. All the information to be able to join these live sessions is available at polarlifeconsulting.com/live. Again, with me today is Jay Patrick. Jay Patrick is an Army veteran who served during the Desert Storm era. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in social work and a master's degree also in social work. And he's also an aspiring minister. And he and I are both part of a Facebook group called Survivors Circle for male survivors of sexual abuse. And I'm very pleased to welcome Jay Patrick to the group to start things off. Also, we do have a live audience here. And for those attendees, if you have any questions you would like to pose or comments to Jay Patrick, feel free to put that in the Q&A section. And again, we will not state your name unless you manually type it in along with your question or comment. And we will start things off with four questions. Now it's time for four questions, that part of the podcast when we get to know our guest a bit better by asking a few questions. Let's go. So, Jay Patrick, what is your favorite food memory?
My first time trying a dish called crawfish etouffee over baked fish and rice.
Ooh, crawfish etouffee. That sounds so fancy, and that's definitely Cajun. So do you like a lot of Cajun food? I love Cajun food. I love all that spice.
I love it.
Yes. Wow. Yes. And you cooked it. So how did it turn out? Was it good?
It was great.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So how did you come to like Cajun food? Are you from that area or?
I'm an hour from the city where Cajun food is popular in this state.
Wonderful. What is your favorite Christmas or holiday memory?
I would say the fifth grade when I got all the presents I wanted out of the Sears catalog that always comes. It used to come in September.
Yep. The wish book, the Sears right. Wish book. And yes, we'd go through and we'd circle all the pictures and show it to the folks. And it's like, okay, we want one of this. Of course, it's everything. I think my sisters used to cut out paper dolls out of the wish book and dress them up and put different outfits on them and stuff. Yeah. But yes, the Sears catalog and the Penney's catalog, those wish books, those were a big thing. What is your favorite church memory?
My first communion at 6 years old.
Wow. And why was that special?
That was the only time children were allowed to sit on the front row.
Ah, so you felt very special and honored.
Yes, sir.
Oh, great. Now, what is your favorite scripture or any inspirational quote that has helped you on your spiritual journey? And what about it speaks to you?
Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the thoughts that I think towards you, saith the Lord. Thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. What inspires me about that is whenever I'm feeling depressed, I'm not feeling very well about my station in life, that gives me comfort to know that God is thinking good thoughts about me and that he wants, and and to know that he wants the best for me.
Right.
In spite of the reason why I'm in this particular group.
Right. Yes. He loves you. You are his beloved son. And yes, he has nothing but love for us. And yeah, I like that verse. That's a great way of showing that love that he has for us. I like that. Thank you. Tell me about your journey as a victim and survivor as much as you would like or willing to share. And then talk about how you have found healing and what has worked, what has not worked, and what you're doing these days. I know you, in your intro, you mentioned you're studying to become a minister. And so I was really curious to see what scripture verse was your favorite. And that says a lot about a man, I think, especially someone looking into ministry. And yeah, that's a great verse. So yes, so wherever you need to start, I know some stories start in the middle and bounce around. I know mine does. So start wherever you feel led.
The first incident that I remember occurred when I was 6 and in the first grade. Sadly, I did not recognize it for what it was, because during this school year, I had been sick a lot. I was bullied by my classmates and also physically abused by a female student teacher. So when the first incident happened, I didn't really see it for what it was, because the individuals who did it came off as being kind and caring.
As often happens for a lot of perpetrators, they will use all of their grooming tactics to convince the victim that they're doing it willingly, that they don't view it as abuse, but with an adult eyes, an adult mind, it certainly was.
Right. And then also it happened at my elementary school, where my grandmother was a cook in the cafeteria. So they knew my grandmother, and sometimes older boys, they would promise to look after me because I was asthmatic. You know, people often ask me about the grooming process. In that case, I don't know if there was a grooming process, because they already had free access to me. It's like I was already being traumatized by this teacher and by my classmates. So I, as a kid, I looked at what they did initially. Well, this wasn't all too bad. What happened was, one of my friends, we all went to the restroom together, and they came, and these two older boys came in from the opposite side. One took my friend into the stall with him, and the other was left out in the main area with me. Don't know what happened to my friend, but the other guy, he did what he did, and it was over with, so I thought.
And how old was that boy who was doing things against you? How old was he? Or how much older than he was?
About 12 or 13.
Okay.
But I was only 6 years old, so right. As far as I was concerned, they may as well have been adults.
Right.
So the next day, when I came back to school, the principal called me to her office, and I didn't suspect anything. When I got to the office, the secretary said, "Well, you can go on in. She's waiting for you." And I walked straight in there, and I saw the two individuals, my friend and his mother. Our guidance counselor was in there, and I believe a social worker. And my friend was sitting in his mother's lap. And that's when I knew something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the principal asked me to tell her what happened yesterday, the day prior. I told her what was done to me, and what was done to my, to what I saw my friend being taken to the stall. Then she took me, after I finished, she told me to turn around and look at the two of them because I was so little I had to look up at them. And she just said, she just told me, look at their faces. And for years, I never understood the significance of why she wanted me to do that.
And now do you understand it?
I think I understand now.
And why do you think that she did that?
They had looks of embarrassment on their faces. I don't know if they was sorry that they got caught or sorry about whatever upcoming consequences she had for them. But I think she wanted them to look at me to see so they could get an understanding of how serious the damage that they did.
Right. Do you think that made a difference?
I think so, because I never saw them after that.
Right. Oh, you didn't. Okay. Were they removed from the school, or you just had no contact?
Removed from the school.
Oh, wow.
But back then, things were not publicized as they are now.
Right. So they might have gone to juvie. They might have just been sent to a different school. Hard to say if you didn't know the families.
Right. Things back then were dealt with in private, but kept hush hush.
Right.
Because for years, I thought I was the only one that had went through this, but then I found out that this happened at another elementary school, the elementary school that I was supposed to have attended, but my father insisted that I wasn't going there. And it would be years before I could understand why.
And what happened? Why?
There was a sixth grade teacher there, a male teacher that was molesting his male students.
And your father knew about this?
I hate to use the word molest. I hate to use that word.
Yeah, it's not one of my favorites either. So it sounded like your father knew this abuse was occurring or had heard rumors of it and wanted to protect you?
He had heard rumors of it and wanted to protect me from it. But... Wow. I guess he didn't know or realize that teenage boys could do the same thing.
Right. Right.
Like I said, these were kids that my grandmother trusted.
Right.
Now, for as damaging as that was, as bad as that was, the incidents I experienced with his sister and his nephew were far more damaging because, number one, these were family members.
Right, right.
And these were people that my mother entrusted me with.
That sounds very devastating. I mean, it's someone you should be able to trust. There is that built-in assumed love with family members that they should be taking care of you. And when they take advantage of that, that's a huge trust that is broken, especially for someone so young to realize that, no, these people who were supposed to be safe, you cannot trust them. And that just rocks your world.
Right. Needless to say, there were parts of my childhood where things were rocky. It was like, as long as I didn't have to interact with my father's side of the family, I was fine. But I was basically forced to interact with them because that side of the family was very large. My dad, he's the third of 13 kids, 9 of which were boys. Whereas my mom only had 2 brothers, but they were the type that once they got married, they didn't really come around my grandparents too much except for Sundays.
Right.
On my dad's side of the family, there was more boys. I had more male cousins. So that's where my mom preferred that I be at, but that turned out to not be such a good thing. Well, presently, it was during my last semester of graduate school that I actually sat down and started to come to terms with the fact that, well, of all the things that happened to me and how it impacted my life, being in the military, then coming back home and returning to school to do my undergrad studies, because my grades in undergrad wasn't so good that it made it hard for me to qualify for a good graduate school. And I attribute that now to the, looking back, I attributed that to the fact that I never dealt with the abuse. I basically spent my teenage years running from it. Because it was like there was always something for me to do, something for me to accomplish. But it was when I got in grad school that, you know, I started out part-time. So whenever I would have flashbacks or triggers, I was able to really sit down and deal with it. And plus, for one of my advanced fracturing classes, I had a very compassionate professor who encouraged me to look into getting treatment.
Good.
Because one of my presentations was upon males who were abused by women.
And you could relate to that.
Yes. And it was like mentally I crashed after that.
Yes.
And this professor, she encouraged me to seek help, to get the help that I need and that I should have gotten a long time ago. But I didn't, because I felt like I didn't deserve it. Because I was undergrad student in social work, and my undergrad professors, they were kind of rough around the edges and they weren't very compassionate.
Right. Right.
For example,
and they're going into social work. They're supposed to be compassionate.
Right. You know, it's like they preach to us being compassionate for our clients, but they were not compassionate for their students.
Well, yes.
See, for example,
do as I say, not as I do. Yes.
Yeah, right. You got it. One issue I had was hugging people, especially women with large breasts. I didn't realize that was a trigger for me.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
No one had ever talked to me about that. And it was suggested that maybe I failed a couple of my classes because I didn't like people hugging me and touching me. So because basically that's what happened. Instead of them taking time to explore these with me, they just say, well, you got a D, take it over next semester.
Wow. Now, were you encouraged to disclose the abuse that happened with your family members to your parents, to other family members? Did that disclosure ever happen?
Yes, but it happened 10 years ago after I had been evicted from my apartment and was staying in a transition home for veterans.
Oh.
And one day I had just gotten very sad and disgusted about the situation that I was in. And I reached out to a prayer group on Facebook and shared what happened to me, and not knowing and not understanding that it was a public, for example, like the survival circle is private and for men only. This was a public group where anybody could see your information.
Yep.
And my mom happened to see it.
Oh.
She had my dad to call and ask what happened. And I told him what his sister did, but I haven't told him what his nephew did. That part I'm just not ready to talk about. Well, because the nephew was still alive at the time.
Right.
he died of cancer, of leukemia 2 years later. But I told him what happened with his sister, and I told him a little bit about the things that happened to me in basic training. And he, as far as the incident that happened in basic training, he could not handle it.
How so?
It involved I was 19 at the time, and it involved an older male drill sergeant that, for lack of a better word, forced himself on me because I wasn't motivated enough.
Wow.
I had gotten sick during a company run where we run maybe like a mile or two around the company or battalion area on post. I had gotten sick and I fell out of the run and I was lagging back. Well, this particular drill sergeant forced me to go behind a building where he had a substance in his hand. He made me lay down on the ground. He put his hand on my mouth, and the substance was so strong, it temporarily knocked me out, and he forced himself on me.
Wow. Yeah, I know there's a lot of discussion I've read. It's called military sexual assault, I believe, and very common because of the power structure and so forth. That, yes, it's very common. And then it's your superior, and you can't report around the superior when it happens if there's a power differential. And then the whole don't ask, don't tell. So if you report it, oh, you must be gay because it happened, even though that's not your preference. But there's that presumption that if you do tell, well, maybe that would then kick me out. And yes, there's all these politics involved where perpetrators will know that and use that to their benefit to assault other men that they can see a weakness in. I also wanted to ask, before the abuse happened, you made the decision to join the military. Do you think your abuse history influenced that? Or is that just something you decided to do for good? Or,
That was something I decided to do, number one, to get away from home, and also to help pay for my college education.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
Being that I was the oldest, I always had to make sacrifices for my brothers.
Right.
And me going to college was something I wasn't going to sacrifice not for anyone. So my thing was, even if I have to find a way to pay for this myself, I was determined to do it. Mm. And then also my mom had a sister that was on drugs, which was another whole problem.
Right.
And because of that, my high school years were horrible because of that.
Right.
In addition to the having to deal with the abuse I suffered as a child, having to deal with a loved one that's having a substance abuse problem. And on top of that, family members enabling her and then taking their anger out on me, that was just too much for me to deal with.
Right. Yeah, definitely not a healthy situation. So sounds like the military was a good out for you, a good way out, though, yes, you still ended up being a victim there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So now you are going through your social work program. You're starting to get help, starting to get healing. What things did you find that really helped you on your healing journey? And which things that you attempted did absolutely nothing or that were either not helpful or were harmful?
Well, the first thing was I heard the singer say once, part of knowing who you are is knowing who you're not.
Yes.
And I had to first find out who J. Patrick was as far as my likes and dislikes, because all of that had been determined by other people's circumstances.
Right.
And and it took me a while, but it, I think it's only last year I finally got to the point where I'm strong enough to say certain things don't work for me. For example, like we're doing this podcast right here. This I like doing things like this.
Yeah, sharing your story. Yes.
Right. And as far as religious setting goes, I don't like to discuss this in mixed audiences because particularly with women, it's kind of like you're playing Russian roulette.
Right.
Because there was a time when a good friend of mine who's helping me write my book, she wanted me to share my story with a mentoring program that she asked me to be a part of. And one of the things that I stated that I did not like women ministers touching me or laying their hands on me while they were praying for me. Right. In other words, I'm okay with them grabbing me by my hand, but don't invade my, don't touch me, don't invade my personal space.
Right.
There were some that were shocked and offended, and there were some that understood, but this one older woman, she kind of took it to another level. And I left that particular session after I spoke because I had another engagement, but it was told to me that things got a little controversial after I left because of the things that she said to me. So I'm in the process of learning who I can talk in front of and what group should I limit what I say.
Right. And our stories are precious, but they're not for everyone, and not everyone will receive it how we intend it to be. And some people are just not ready to hear it. Some of them, it could be too traumatic. Some of it that it would be too triggering for them to hear parts of our story. I know I have shared at different venues, and I got trained. I shared my story in CR, Celebrate Recovery, 12-step Christian group, and they preview anyone who reads a testimony. You have to submit it ahead of time, and they will give you feedback. Because I was abused as an infant as well, I actually had a picture of me as the baby. It's like, you can talk about it. Don't show a picture, because over half the audience is ladies. And as soon as you show that picture and say you were abused, we're going to lose all of them. They're going to start crying. It's going to be a mess. So no, don't do that. Really? Wow. And I'd never thought about that, but they had enough experience with that particular audience, with that particular group, knowing what was triggering to them, what would be too severe for them to be able to process as an audience, and realizing, yeah, parts of our story can be too much for people to hear. So getting discernment to know who the right audience are to hear our stories, I think that's part of the journey as well, learning who needs to hear our stories and who doesn't need to hear our stories.
And then also there are people who are unfortunately very ignorant and not very sympathetic.
Yes, exactly.
And they will knowingly and unknowingly engage in victim blaming.
Yes, very much. So knowing when to and when not to. Yeah, that's a big part.
And another thing I'm learning to be comfortable with is the subject of forgiveness. For a long time, you could not mention that word around me.
Right. But I know a lot of survivors struggle with that concept, for sure.
So many religious leaders pressured you to do that. But one therapist told me that forgiveness is really just giving up all hope that the past will be different.
Yeah.
Because I've had some religious people say, if you forgive them, you ought to be able to sit around them. No, right. You know, I don't think people understand how difficult that is to have holiday dinners with the person who violated you as a child.
Right.
And especially right. When they're family.
Right. So triggering. I've heard so many stories of that. And interesting, that quote you gave, I remember Oprah using that same quote, that she had heard that quote as well. And yeah, I love that quote, that forgiveness is accepting the fact the past can't be any different. It's really for us, not for the person we're forgiving. We don't even have to tell them that we forgive them. And forgiveness and reconciliation are two very separate things. And they'll say, forgive and forget, that's in the Bible. No, it's not. That's actually from Shakespeare, is where that comes from. Forgiveness is definitely in the Bible, but not forgive and forget. Yeah, and reconciliation is a whole nother matter. And forgiving does not release the person from the responsibility for their action, for those illegal acts that they performed. It does not release them from the responsibility of those things. Not forgiving, someone said, it's like drinking poison yourself, hoping it's going to kill the other person, because that unforgiveness can just eat away at us like a cancer, that anger and so forth. And forgiveness truly helps us in the healing process when we can let go of that, and knowing, accepting the fact past cannot change, the past is what it is, and being able to move on from that is very helpful, very healing. But I know it is a huge struggle for a lot of survivors, so I love the fact you share that, that it was a struggle for you to forgive. And for me, my main perpetrator was my father, and it's still a process of forgiveness. And then also, as I heal, I realize more crap that he did. So then I've got to forgive that too. But then I have to go through all of the emotions on all the anger and all of those feelings of all the new stuff I uncover. And then I can reach a point for forgiveness. And then more stuff comes up. It's like God knows we can only handle so much. And then when we get rid of that, oh, and by the way, there's this other stuff here too that you need to deal with. So it's just chunks at a time, getting them out, dealing with them, and getting rid of them. And then more chunks come through, and it's a healing journey. It is a process. Thank you so much for sharing that. So what are you doing today to continue your healing journey? You're doing social work. What other things are you doing currently that help in your healing?
I'm in the process of looking for a suitable male therapist to continue the healing process. I'm still working on my book, just exploring some avenues that I want to take as far as being an advocate.
Right. I think that's so important for our own journey, when we can take it out of ourselves and help others as well. And that kind of solidifies our own healing as we help others to heal. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you so much for sharing your story and your heart and your journey with us, J. Patrick. I'm so honored to have you here. And we'll thank you, all of my listeners. And we'll see you next week with the Healing for Male Survivor podcast. If you would like to learn more about my coaching with Polar Live Consulting, where I provide one-on-one coaching and group coaching, both with a focus on healing for male survivors, reach out to me at polarliveconsulting.com. That is Polar, spelled P-O-L-A-R. I would love to hear from you. I want to hear your story. If you would like your story featured on this podcast, contact me via my website. If you like this podcast, please rate and review, because that's how other people can find me, and I really want to spread this message of healing and hope to others. And remember, you are not alone. Healing is possible, and the abuse was not your fault. Let me repeat that. The abuse was not your fault. See you next time on the Healing for Male Survivors podcast.